all our scribbled love dreams.
Well, well, well. Today Hello. Must be the first Monday in August, do you think?
It must be.
Because guess what?
We're here.
My name is Todd Lyon.
I'm Nancy Shea.
And we are the New Haven Mavens.
And this is the New Haven Mavens Radio Hour.
On WPKN.
And we come to you every first Monday of the month with a different topic each time. And today we're going to be talking with some experts in the field of pollination. They're going to be talking about bees and butterflies in Connecticut and how they've been, in a sad state of decline for many years, but those populations are coming back with the help of these people.
So it's a happy, colorful show, like we imagine butterflies to be.
They are happy and colorful.
Do you want to hear some trivia? Do you know that butterflies taste with their feet? And we can all be very happy that we do not have taste buds in our feet. It would be really, life would not be worth living if we all had taste buds in our feet. That's all.
there's some weird maneuvering going on in here
in the studio. So we're really excited about our guest today. We have some wonderful people joining us on phone. Unfortunately, we don't have a studio guest today. As you can imagine, it's high butterfly season and high bee season. So we're not
in the studio. But, you know, I don't know if we'd have any room anyway. We have our beach chairs, our lounge chairs, and our beach umbrellas here and that sort of thing. So
yes, we do. And wine coolers.
Yeah, right.
Wine coolers.
This is how we're spending our nice summer on the first Monday.
Bendy straws. That's us.
Okay, so in terms of guests today, we have an assortment here.
Mm-hmm.
We have Ami Ziner, and she's a park ranger with the Ansonia Nature and Recreation Center. We have Victor DeMassi, and he is an expert in butterflies.
He's bigger than life.
He's also affiliated with the Yale Peabody Natural History Museum. And we also have Mark Creighton with us. All of these people will be on the phone. He is the state bee inspector with the agricultural
Talk station. About cool jobs. You know, if you're collecting cool job titles, I'm sorry, state bee inspector is really good.
I know. That's right up there.
It really is.
Yeah.
And if you want to get, you know, existential and have it to be or not to be, I don't know. There's just a lot of things you can do with that title.
Oh, yeah. Clever.
Sorry.
Yes.
I just can't help it. Anyway, so our very first guest is somebody who I greatly admire her. Ami is a ranger at the Ansonia Nature Center. She has so much passion for her job. It is really astounding. She works with a lot of children and adults, and she's sort of one of the heart and soul people of this wonderful recreation and nature center. In addition to her duties as a park ranger, she's also a very gifted artist, and often her subject matters can be found in and around the Ansonia Nature Center. So do we have her on the line, Steve? Well, Ami, hi. Welcome to the New Haven Mavens Radio Hour. You're on WPKN.
Ami, are you there with us?
La la la, la la la. Cue music.
Got any more trivia? Got any more?
All right. Well, listen. Let me go. Is she now there? Ami, are you there?
Hi.
Oh, hi. There you are.
We had a little glitch there, but we're glad you're here with us.
Ami, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you.
I'm so happy to be on the show.
Yay!
Excellent. I guess maybe we should start out with you just giving us a little bit about your background and what you do with the Nature Center.
Okay, well, I'm one of four rangers at the Ansonia Nature Center, and we do mostly education. We have regular classes that we do for all kinds of things, varying from hiking and full moon observation.
Ooh.
To this, we do celestial events. We also do like this past Sunday, a butterfly walk. We do special birding adventures, and we also run a summer camp. We do one in July for the rec department for Ansonia, and then we do another one in August, which is for Ansonia residents primarily, but we get people from the whole region that come for the summer camp.
So these are day camps for kids?
Yeah, they generally they run like 9 to 3 or 8:30 to 3, and
how old are the kitties?
Really, well, we take kids as young as 4.
Ooh.
So we have, you know, the baby group, and then we have the older kids, and then in the fall we also do something called Junior Rangers, which is as it sounds, they follow along with one of the rangers, and we do projects with them. Sometimes it's trail clearing, or they'll build shelters. They'll do all kinds of projects. And
I've never been to the center, and neither has Nancy. Can you give us an idea of how big it is and what various features it's got?
Sure. Well, we have 156 acres,
Ooh.
Which is quite a large area.
Yeah, that's bigger than I imagine.
Yeah, our property is... it's sort of overlaid with a corner of the 500-acre Naugatuck State Forest.
Oh, wow.
So if you want to come and hike for 2 or 3 hours, it's totally possible there.
Can a person actually camp at the Naugatuck State Forest, et cetera, at the Ansonia Nature Center?
No, that's
the
state forest, so they have different rules. We don't actually do overnight camping.
Oh, I see.
So if somebody wanted to... If somebody wanted to come and hike, do they have to be an Ansonia resident, or can anybody
it's a
come in?
Park, yeah.
And they don't have to register with you or do anything like that. They're just out there walking around.
Well, we do have trail maps located. There's a map outside, but you can also come in and pick up a map, which is helpful. There's about 3 miles of trails. They vary just from easy to moderate.
Uh-huh.
We don't have any really difficult trails. If there's somebody that has some limited mobility, we have, easy trails that the ranger on duty can point out.
Oh, that's nice. Is there water, bodies of water?
Yeah, 2-acre pond.
Oh, I stepped right on your line there. Yeah.
And we have great habitats. In fact, every year the Audubon Society comes and they do a bird count. And I think last time they were there, they take a period of time, like an hour, and they count all the birds they can find in an hour.
Right.
And I think they had 38 birds last time.
Oh, that's great.
38 species?
Birds,
yeah.
38 wow.
Species. That's good.
So we have all kinds of habitats, which is really helpful for the different birds. They all, have different requirements. But, so we have wetland, we have pine forest, we have wetland forest that's deciduous trees. That means the leaves fall off in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
There's upland meadow, there's all kinds of garden areas that are especially good for attracting pollinators, mm-hmm. as well as birds, which will then eat the pollinators.
Yeah.
we have a lot of wildlife there. Regularly people spot things like coyotes and bobcats.
Nice.
And, of course, foxes and then the smaller mammals, mm-hmm. The possums, skunks, things like that.
That's wonderful. Hey, though, I heard that you guys, I actually know that you guys had sort of a miracle happen last year. Didn't you get a new playground?
Oh, we did. It
didn't
was
the
a
basement guy do it, Larry Janeski?
Yeah, Larry Janeski.
The basement guy.
Yeah, the basement guy, Larry Janeski.
Well, what happened was that our playground was 25 years old, hugely popular. Everybody loved it, but it was just splintering apart. And a kid got hurt, and the city said, it's got to come down. So the next day they came and then took it down. Which
wow,
was
that
shocking
fast.
Because, yeah, it was right before our summer camp season, too.
Oh, really?
So,
that's terrible. So how long was it not in operation?
It was 2 months, but it was through the Valley United Way. The Valley United Way Foundation had a Pat was one of the people that found Larry Janeski and told him, because he'd asked her, he does a you know, a civic-minded project, a volunteer thing every year. And he rebuilt a church in Bridgeport a few years ago, and it just really great things. And he heard about us, and, you know, there was back and forth with the city. They permitted everything right away, and he made it happen. He brought like 200 people over and one weekend
yeah.
in July and built it.
They built it in one weekend.
Yeah.
I find that so extraordinary.
It was extraordinary.
For those of you who don't know about the basement guy, this guy is a businessman, and his specialty is renovating basements. And he's, you know, one of these people you see him on TV. He runs ads on local TV, et cetera. And behind all that, there's this amazing, big-hearted guy who is so community-minded. I mean, building a playground, a kid's play, beautiful playground in the course of one weekend
is
just
spectacular.
Astounding. Yeah.
So yes, it has slides, swings, stuff to a climbing wall, you know, all of these raised platforms with binoculars on them the kids can look out at, and it's just terrific. Yeah. And then the city came in, and they made it all ADA accessible recently.
Oh, fantastic. So, even better.
Yeah. The city has invested so much in upkeep recently that it's very heartening.
Yeah.
They put in a brand new parking lot, which is has what's called a bioswale in the center, which is it catches rainwater and filters it through a biofilter, mm-hmm. Which is composed of, you know, plants and then different grades of sand and rock and so forth. So that unlike our old parking lot, which was just pretty much gravel and some old asphalt, the stuff that drips out of the car, you know, the coolant and the oil and so forth, no longer gets on the ground and runs right into the wetlands. Now it gets filtered through this system.
That's pretty brilliant. Hey, listen, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. Our guest, if you're just tuning in, our guest is Ami Ziner. Did I pronounce your last name properly?
Perfectly.
Wonderful. And she is a park ranger at the Ansonia Nature. The full name is the Ansonia Nature and Recreation Center, right?
Yep.
In Ansonia, Connecticut. And
you're listening to the New Haven Mavens Radio Hour, and we come to you every Monday. Every first Monday of the month with a different topic of interest, and we yak to some interesting people who are out there doing interesting things.
And we heart WPKN.
We do.
We do. So
I love WPKN.
Oh, good. We like hearing that.
For years.
Yeah, I know. It's such a treasure for us to have a station like this.
Yeah, it is. So, Ami, let's flit over to the subject of butterflies.
Okay.
Joe, you have a...
Flit over? Did you do that on purpose?
I did that on purpose. Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
I did notice it.
Do you have a butterfly habitat there? Tell me about what's happening with butterflies at the Ansonia Recreation, Nature Recreation
Center. We have a butterfly garden.
Okay.
We also have this pollinator meadow, which is a pretty vast area of the nature center. It's a very large meadow, and it's covered with milkweed plants, and in the fall with goldenrod.
Mm.
So those two plants, just those two, are hugely important as food and habitat for monarch butterflies and for bees.
Now, what's the relationship between monarch butterflies and milkweed?
Okay, well, this is very special because most insects have what's called a host plant. This is the plant that the young of that species will feed on until they mature, and then they will often use it as a food source, ongoing food source, as they become adults. So they go from being a caterpillar to a chrysalis to an adult, and the whole process, they use the milkweed plants, and it's a very... It's a very important relationship, and because milkweed is a weed, it's been pretty decimated across the United States and through Central America because of agriculture and the use of glycophosphates to kill weeds. Those things have brought the population in the last 20 years down from, I think it was a half a billion estimated, to 2% of that.
Oh, dear. God,
yeah.
Those numbers are devastating.
There's two things that happen with monarch butterflies in particular that is really one of the magical things about them. They have this process of that all butterflies go through where they go from the larval stage, which is the caterpillar, to a chrysalis. And inside the chrysalis, the most interesting thing happens. Their whole body kind of liquefies and reforms as a butterfly from a caterpillar. It's like the DNA knows what to rebuild as. And the second miraculous thing
I'll talk about miracles.
Is that specific to the monarchs?
No, that's butterflies and
okay,
moths.
Yeah, all right. I was wondering.
And then, and there's lots of other insects, like even cicadas go through that amazing transformation. It's just not as dramatic a change as from a caterpillar to a butterfly. Like the nymph stage of the cicada, it looks a lot like an adult cicada, except it has wings.
Right. But the monarch
is... the adult has wings.
Yeah.
So the other amazing thing about monarchs is that they migrate.
Yeah.
And that blows my mind because that how could this little tiny thing have any agency? You know, like how can it get from point A to point B? But it does, and they migrate over generations. So the butterfly that leaves Mexico in January or February and flies northwest to or northeast rather, it doesn't make it all the way over to Connecticut. That's three generations later.
Oh my! I didn't realize that.
Goes about Isn't that wild?
Yes,
yeah, it really is.
Each generation will go about 1,500 miles and stop, lay eggs, and die.
Oh.
The last generation in October doesn't die. It migrates.
That is, it's really astonishing. It really is.
Crazy.
Yeah. Now you have raised butterflies yourself, right?
Yeah. In fact,
can a person do that? Can just a regular Jane or Joe raise a butterfly, raise butterflies?
Absolutely.
Why don't you tell us?
I ordered two. They didn't have any monarch caterpillars at the time, but I really wanted to raise some caterpillars into butterflies. So I went online and I got painted lady butterflies.
God, the internet.
Yeah, anything you want. They come in a little jar, and there's these little caterpillars, and there's food in the jar. And it has little holes in the top.
How many were there?
Basically, there were five in each container.
Uh-huh.
But I thought the food that they gave them was a little dubious. Their natural host plant is Rose of Sharon.
Like a grilled cheese sandwich or something? Was it like a grilled cheese sandwich, something like that?
Yeah.
Franks and beans?
Yeah, no.
Franks and beans.
It was stuff that looked kind of like cornmeal or something. I don't know what it was. But anyhow, they ate it very happily, and they got bigger. And some of them didn't make it. They sort of disappeared. Four of them actually hatched and were released.
Oh, sweet. How fun. That's great. So did all that happen in the jar?
Well, I moved them into a bigger jar.
Uh-huh.
And I put some screening over the top. And they give you some sugar packets, like you're ordering a cup of coffee.
Wow.
And you mix it with water and put it on a cotton ball that they give you. And that's what they eat for a couple of days. And then when they're strong enough, you release them.
That's so great.
Yeah.
So you hand-raised some butterflies.
Yeah, it was not expensive, and I basically doubled the population of butterflies in my front yard.
That's
and they
great.
Hang around. They haven't left.
Oh, nice. That's great.
Yeah. I have a lot of food for them there. I grow butterfly bushes and lots of flowers. So.
And then I know you have to go pretty soon, but can we talk a little bit about how people can grow milkweed in their yards and gardens?
Sure. In fact, I looked this up because every year I make a donation to SaveOurMonarchs.org, and that's out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. And what you do is they will give you 3 free packets of seeds, which is about 90 seeds. If you send them, I think if you send them a PayPal, you can get 250 seeds for $5.
That's that's very good.
And I always send them $25, and I get a huge bunch of seeds. I get 25 packets of 30 seeds. And what I do is I give them out when we have our Earth Day festival at the Ansonia Nature Center.
Now, didn't you say you have to put them in the refrigerator or something? What's that?
Oh, it's called stratifying. It just mimics the natural process of going through the winter. And they get it changes their genetic makeup somehow, and it wakes them up. So you take them, put them on wet paper towels in a baggie, like a Ziploc bag.
Yeah.
And stick them in the fridge for a month. And then plant them, and you'll get much better germination.
Very cool. I have learned.
So make sure that you're getting common milkweed and not butterfly weed or dogbane or showy milkweed or swamp milkweed, because the only one that they need that is called common milkweed, if you plant the other ones, they will use it for food, but they can't lay their eggs on it.
Okay.
So do you think that a normal garden center would be able to advise a homeowner correctly what they should be getting in terms of plants that will attract butterflies?
Well, probably not one of the big box store garden centers because that's not really their focus. They're interested in selling potted plants for the
Roundup.
And lots and lots of glycophosphate and neonicotinoids, which are both terrible for the environment, but very profitable.
Haven't we heard that story before?
Yeah, we certainly have. I mean, we could talk to you all day about this stuff. You are so knowledgeable. And I did want to mention that you also are an artist, and you did this charming series called Playground Mouse. And you can find...
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Can we find that artwork on the Book of Faces, or
the Ansonia... The Book of Faces and the Ansonia Nature Center's page, if you look in their photos. But I have up to episode 10. And what happened was somebody dropped off... I'll just briefly... Someone put... 2 baby mice in a box in front of our door, right under the sign that says, "Please don't leave animals here."
Oh, yes.
We don't do rehabilitation. I was relatively new, and I took the baby mouse home, and one of them survived the night. The other one didn't make it through the night. But I took that one home, and I fed it with an eyedropper. And every 3 hours... And it grew up, and I let it go. But my boss's, the director's daughter, kept asking, "How is the mouse?" And I finally know a picture is worth 1,000 words. I drew a picture of it.
Oh, okay.
I drew a little picture of the mouse and, what happened to it that day. And she loved it, so I did another one. And then I started posting them online, and people loved them, and... And it will be an ongoing series as soon as my broken wrist heals.
I know, you poor thing.
Well, we'll encourage our listeners to. You're easy to find online, right?
Yeah, on Facebook the Nature Center has a great website, and we have Pinterest.
Okay.
And
We really need to move on, Amy. I'm sorry. We've kind of gone over our little time slot here because you have so much to say.
I know, really.
But,
we could go on and on.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
And folks, definitely take a visit to the Ansonia Nature Center.
Yep.
And
we're at 10 Deerfield Road in Ansonia, Connecticut.
Great.
And you can find us online. And the phone number is 203-736-1053.
Okay, cool. Amy.
All right, have a great day.
Okay, thanks so much for being with us today.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. So if anybody wants any further information, too, about anybody that we have on our show, you can contact the Mavens. We're happy to hear from you. We encourage correspondence with us either through our Facebook page or via email at new.haven.mavens.com. No, at Gmail. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not a website.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll try it again.
It's been one of those days. Okay. new.haven.mavens at gmail.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the wonderful, beloved WPKN 89.5 FM, and we are the New Haven Mavens, and this is the New Haven Mavens Radio Hour. And today's show is about pollinators. We just got off the phone with a park ranger, a Mew Ziner, and I think that we have on the line with us now, do we have
yes.
Victor? Well,
Victor, are you with us?
I'm here.
Wonderful.
Hi, Victor.
We're so glad you were able to join us today. I know you're on a really tight schedule. You were out in the field today, is that it?
No, it's raining, so that kind of squashed that.
Oh, that's too bad. But you've been really busy. It's high butterfly season, isn't it?
That's right. This is the time of year, and they're all over the place. So not so many this year. We've had a very cool, wet spring, and that's had an effect on the population. So we're not seeing as many as we normally do. I'd say it's a slow season that way, but mm-hmm. there's still out there. There's still butterflies out there, and I'm still out there chasing them.
Great.
That's you. You've been chasing butterflies for how long now?
Oh, it's been about 40 years.
Uh-huh.
I got my start. I was a college student in San Francisco, and I had a professor who was interested in flat-footed flies. And I was basically started out as a fly and beetle person, but went into the Peace Corps in Ethiopia, where it was kind of like an insect smorgasbord, so to speak.
And I'll bet.
Butterflies were just amazing in Africa, and had some pretty good bush stories from those days.
Yes.
And, well, one of the things is when you were looking for insects in Ethiopia, or butterflies, you had a crowd following you all the time, very interested in what you were doing. It got quite oppressive, and I'd yell at them in Amharic, which I was pretty fluent in, to, you know, get back, and then move off and then start following again. So it was impossible to shake them. My spouse, who's been my constant companion on our travels, and we had to leave Ethiopia when they had the revolution, very brutal revolution at the
yeah.
time. And we went to East Africa, Kenya and Tanzania, to make a collection before we came back to the United States. And there I got the name of Bwana Dudu, which means Mr. Bugs in Swahili.
I love that
That's
name.
Great.
Say it again.
Bwana Dudu.
Good. So good.
But,
Mr. Bug.
You know, We had some interesting episodes there, and all the collecting was really in remote areas that were probably too dangerous to go nowadays, but
now,
were still pretty peaceful in those days.
Victor, weren't you hunted by Maasai warriors?
Well, in one area near Ngorongoro Crater, which is a spectacular wildlife area, a big collapsed volcanic crater with all these animals down in it, we were up on the rim and got out to look, and some Maasai teenagers, I would say, came out of the bush all painted up and stuff and attacked us. And they chewed my wife off, but the last I remember, they hit me over the head with a stick with a big rock at the end of it, and I was almost unconscious. And he was pointing his panga, which is a machete, at my belly. And, you know, robbing us. And at that very moment, a Land Rover with a missionary and a bunch of Africans came along in this very remote area. I mean, there was nobody else all day, and they got out and chased them off. So I was saved in the nick of time, but with the crunch on my head, I was seen double or triple for several days. And we went on to drive through the Serengeti Plain, and so I got to see all the animals in double, twice as many as you normally get to see.
It was a Noah's Ark experience, I bet. I'll bet.
Yeah, it was, but it was amazing, and, you know, I was young, and those things are good when you're young.
Yes.
Be a little harder. But, you know, back home, we got involved in butterflies still, and when I was renting a house when we first got married, the real estate agent took me around looking at rentals all day long and was getting quite annoyed that nothing interested me. And she said, finally, you know, Victor, I have a dog, but you might be interested. And so we pulled up in the driveway of this Victorian house, and there was this wonderful two-acre meadow, and I've been here ever since.
Oh,
buying it.
Wonderful.
It's our meadow where we have it recorded over half the Connecticut butterfly fauna in our backyard.
You've recorded over half of the butterfly fauna?
Yeah, there's about 128 species in Connecticut, and we've gotten over 60 just in our backyard.
Wow, that's
several,
fantastic. That's really great.
Rare species.
Now, Victor, you live in Redding, right?
Right. I'm in Redding, Connecticut. That's right.
But you work all over the state.
Well, you know, my travels take me everywhere. I am very involved at the Peabody Museum.
Yeah, let's hear about that. What are you doing? Tell me about your relationship with the Peabody. We are the New Haven Mavens, after all, and we do
well,
care.
When I came back from Africa, we had this large collection, and Charles Remington, a very well-known professor at Yale, somehow got in contact with me through the channels, and next thing I knew, I was hanging out at the Peabody, and my collection eventually went to our collection went to the Peabody Museum, which is
so people can
now.
See your collection. Is your name on it?
All the specimens have my wife and my name, Roanna Matowski, on them. As you know, the collectors and the localities that we collect them.
And how many specimens do you think you have at the Peabody?
Oh, it's well in excess of 10,000.
Whoa!
Although we've never done a head count, so to speak.
Yeah.
Or count, as you would say, in butterflies. But we went on. I mean, we're still busy traveling. Recent collecting trips and observation trips have been to Nicaragua and French Guiana, which is the top part of the Amazon. So we're still, you know, hanging out in remote areas whenever we get the chance. Right now we're doing one, the fifth year of a survey of the mountainous areas of California. So we get to, every June we go out for a month, and, you know, we're very concerned about the global warming, climate change issue, and this is reflected in butterflies. So, that's what our interest is in California fauna at the moment.
Yeah, because you've been doing this for 40 years. You must be really, you have front row seats to what's going on.
Oh, yeah, and it's really interesting now. Because, you know, we have records going back 40 years, and we are, you know, documenting the changes. We weren't planning it that way when we started, but, you know, that's what it has become. So our records have become very valuable as a documentation of the way climate is changing. Here in Connecticut, our big problem right now is invasive plants. And plants are coming in mostly from Central Asia, of all places, and they're taking over our habitats and stuff and crowding out the native vegetation, which the butterflies are dependent on. We had three species, very rare species, on our property in my backyard, so to speak, and they have disappeared over the last 40 years.
Rare species of plants, you're saying?
No, butterflies.
Oh, butterflies, okay.
Yeah, the butterflies are, you know, as caterpillars, they feed on specific plants. For instance, the monarch feeds on the milkweeds only.
Right.
So if you don't have milkweeds, you're not going to have monarchs. And we had three species that were, you know, their habitat has been crowded out by invasive plants, and they've disappeared.
Oh,
so
boy.
Very
now,
sad.
The unbalance in the habitat, does that also create a situation where any kind of predators are more available?
No,
and are they suffering at all from predation, or is it mostly just from the invasives?
And plant. Give you an example, okay? We have this terrible invasive plant on our meadow called black swallowwort, which we've been trying to control. Now, black swallowwort's a member of the milkweed family from Central Asia. So monarchs mistake black swallow wort as an appropriate food for their caterpillars, lay their eggs, and the caterpillars starve because it's not the right plant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of things that are, you know, going on with butterflies, is loss of the plant or confusion with the wrong plant. This is some of the processes that are going on. And the monarch, you know, this has been an area of big concern in recent years. Monarch populations have declined precipitously. But one of our happy stories in Connecticut this year is that monarchs are around again after several years where we saw none.
Is that right? Was there actually zero?
Yeah, zero. Because we know that because we've done, we also do a census here called the 4th of July count. And every 4th of July, a bunch of us go out and look for butterflies and document them. And several years, 3 or 4 years back, we had no monarchs at all. Whereas back in when we started the count 25 years ago, we'd have 25, 30 monarchs on a count.
Wow.
So this is the kind of thing we're documenting. So,
yeah,
you know, I raised my family, you know, this was a big thing, butterflies in our family. And to show you how butterflies can have kind of a the wrong effect on a family, my daughter, who's now 30, said to me recently, you know, Dad, I didn't know till I was 13 that all families didn't go chasing butterflies on vacation.
That's pretty cool, though. Listen, if you're just joining us, we're in the middle of a wonderful conversation with Victor DeMasi, who's a butterfly guy. He's a scientist and a gatherer and a teacher, affiliated also with the Peabody, and you're a lecturer and et cetera. And our program today on the New Haven Mavens Radio Hour is about pollinators. So we're talking about butterflies and bees. And Victor, do you still have a TV show, Butterflies in My Backyard?
No, I don't. But I have the program, Butterflies in My Backyard. It's kind of a lecture presentation with specimens from the museum on view. And we go around. I go around through libraries, and garden clubs are big into butterflies these days. Like you said, pollinators are the name of the game right at the moment. So anybody's, you know, a lot of people who are interested in pollinators have been getting in touch with me to, you know, make a presentation.
Is there a rise in the interest of people attracting pollinators?
Yes. There's a lot of concern, and there is concern about the invasive plants, which is part of my talk that I go into. So people are waking up that invasive plants are all over the place. One of the things I do is, you know, I do walks for land trusts for free. They're open to the public. We have one in Wilton, Connecticut this Sunday, which is my last one of the season. And that is actually, if anybody's interested in your listeners, it's hosted through the NRWA, which can be Googled, and you can sign up to go there. But it's, you know, that's one of the main things we're talking about now is the issue of the invasive plants and the degradation of the environment. Also, the lawnification of Connecticut, as I call it.
Right.
You know, people are turning everything into lawns. You see a nice meadow, next year it's a lawn. So these are losses of places where butterflies live.
Well, I know that there's a push now with the DOT to be replanting roadway medians with flowers instead of turf grasses and that sort of thing. I'm not sure exactly how cooperative they are with that, but
it's a law now.
Wonderful to hear. Yeah, because it's their butterflies too, you know?
Right. Because you see that in a lot of states now.
Yes.
But Connecticut has kind of fallen by the wayside. Well, of course, as we've widened roads, we've gotten rid of, you know, any of the planted areas anyway.
Yeah, but last year there was a law passed, right, in Connecticut in 2016?
What?
A law about...
you know, I don't know about that. I'm
okay,
sorry.
Okay, we'll talk to the next guy about that. We have a government guy coming on after you. We'll grill him about that.
Okay.
Yeah, there actually is a push to get rid of all the neonicotinoids, which, of course, they did years ago in Europe, but we're a little slow here in the U.S.
Yes,
for that.
Yes, well, Lady Bird Johnson was big on promoting, you know, natural habitats along roadways and stuff in Texas.
See, I wonder if that's how she got her name.
Is that right?
I don't know. I just made that up.
Okay. Well, that sounds good.
So, Victor, what can people do? What can a mortal do? What can a mere mortal do about...
Well, I think, you know, if you have access to a meadow or something, try to preserve it. Be aware of what's going on. Try to support local land trusts. In our area, you know, the Assateague Land Trust, the Redding Land Trust, the Wilton Land Trust that are making efforts to save these areas we took for granted 15 or 20 years ago. You know, our backyard, so to speak. And, you know, I have a comment on this. You know,
please
people,
do.
We had the National Lepidoptera, is what we study. We had the National Lepidoptera Conference in New Haven about 10 years ago. And I was chosen to lead a walk, you know, to show all these scientists from around the world who've seen the most spectacular butterfly populations of the, you know, great butterfly diversity. I had to take them to my town, my backyard, and show them some habitats. And I was nervous because, you know, you're going up against the all-star team here.
Yeah.
And after I took them for the day and we looked at the butterflies and enjoyed them, I said to them, well, what's your takeaway opinion? And one of the persons said, I didn't realize Connecticut was so beautiful. And it's true. We are a beautiful state, but it's in our backyard. It's not national parks like Yosemite and stuff like that. It's in my backyard. And, you know, that's why I kind of came away with the idea of butterflies in my backyard.
Nice.
Because it really is up to individual homeowners to take an interest in it and preserve those
areas.
And
they can make changes. And you can plant milkweed, too, which is another thing. And, you know, try to, do the, you know, promote the habitat. But as I was saying, we had a late season this year in Connecticut. So, actually, there might be some good butterfly time ahead of us. But one of the things that's happening this year that people can look for are painted ladies. They're having a population explosion all over the Northeast, and so you might be seeing a lot of painted ladies.
Yeah, our previous guest was just talking about raising painted ladies. She actually got some, you know, caterpillars and raised them. Yeah.
Well, you'll be able to see a lot of them outside, and from my my friend and fellow curator at the museum, Dr. Larry Gall, he said he's seeing lots of them. I'm yet to enjoy that, but I'm looking forward to it, and I'm sure their population is exploding on Long Island and in Maine and stuff. They're just, you know, crazy. So
that's great. That's good to know. That's a happy note. So
And gypsy moths are becoming a problem again after not seeing them for many years. They are coming around. But fortunately, they were infesting some areas in the New Haven area, and they have been subdued by a bacteria, which is causing their massive die-off, which is good if anybody remembers the awful...
I do.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I remember that.
The blighted trees were terrible.
In July. Remember how the roads were slick? And,
right. God. Yep. That was a horrible
thing. The frass was dropping from the trees. I won't tell you what frass is, but I'll leave it to your imagination.
Yep. Boy, I'm really sorry that we're going to have to move on here, Victor.
Okay.
You have a lot of fascinating information, and I still had a bunch of questions here. But, maybe we can get you on again sometime.
You know, check out my I have a Facebook page open to the public. You don't have to be a Facebook member, called Butterflies in My Backyard.
Uh-huh.
And we talk on that Facebook page all about, you know, what we're finding every day in our Connecticut backyard. So for your listeners who would like to go beyond what we've talked to today, that would be a good place to start.
Wonderful. Thank you. Victor DeMasi, everybody. He's a wonderful he's a wonderful guy to have in our state. We're lucky to have him. And he's the ambassador of the butterflies. So thank you so much for being with us, Victor.
Doo-doo to you.
Right. Keep doing good work.
You've been listening to, you are listening to WPKN 89.5 FM, community-supported radio. We are the New Haven Mavens, and this is
the New Haven Mavens Radio Hour. We come to you every first Monday of the month with a new topic, and we're talking about pollinators today and the state of the bee and butterfly populations in Connecticut, and how there's actually a bit of a revival going on with the help of some of our people who are working towards.
So our third and final guest.
Do we have
I think we've got him. Our third and final guest has probably what might be the best job title ever. He's the State Bee Inspector.
So
his name is Mark Creighton, and we're really happy to have him today. He's out of the Connecticut Agricultural Station, which is an amazing beehive of activity in New Haven.
Yeah.
The Connecticut Agricultural Station. It's a wonderful place. Mark, are you there?
I am there.
Hi, Mark.
Thank you for
Wonderful.
Giving me the opportunity to talk about them bees.
Yeah. Great. Welcome to the
Great.
Show.
Thanks,
We're so
Mark.
Happy to have you.
Well, we don't have all that
there.
Much time, so how about you jump right in and tell us about what a day looks like for you as the state bee inspector, and a bit about your background, too.
Well, you know, the Ag Station is just a wonderful place for me to work, and I'm primarily involved with assisting beekeepers with bee health issues, and I go around the state inspecting bee colonies to make sure that they are healthy and not full of disease.
Now, do you do this on an individual level, but also on a commercial level?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And so anyone who calls, I go. I'm like the Ghostbuster guy. If you've got a problem, call me. Ghostbusters.
Do individual beekeepers, just a lay beekeeper, if that's what you might call them, do they have to register with you or anything like that?
Yes, and because of the disease, many brood diseases that the bees have, and some are pretty communicable and pretty fatal. And on two occasions in our history in Connecticut, the bee populations were decimated by these brood diseases. So we started an inspection program here in Connecticut over 100 years ago.
I was going to say, I was and looking so at the organization, the professional organization has been around since 1891.
Yes, absolutely.
That's really impressive.
And so, we you know, our brood diseases are under control, but we have other challenges, as some of your guests have alluded to. And, in fact, we just recently updated our rules and regulations. We got some new laws enacted this year to further the open the net a little bit on what we're going to be looking at, because although the brood diseases historically have been problems, we have this nasty little creature called a varroa mite, or more properly named varroa destructor, which is a mite that is devastating our honeybee populations, you know, in the world and in the United States, and certainly here in Connecticut also. And it's a major vector of viruses that are then transmitted to both other honeybee colonies and our native pollinators. And so we certainly want to control that creature also.
Now, I read that there are about 300 different species of bees in Connecticut.
Well,
are those
there are
native?
A lot. Most of them are native.
Okay. And so we don't have any kind of an issue with there being non-natives that are squeezing some of the natives out of the habitat?
Yeah, I think that the issue that we have with all bees, number one would be, and some of your guests have talked about some of these issues prior, you know, the indiscriminate use of pesticides, the new type of pesticides that we have today, agricultural chemicals, loss of habitat, all these pressures affect both the honeybee and our native pollinators. And I'm certainly concerned with the vectoring of viruses to our honeybees by this varroa mite, because our honeybees are then in contact with our native pollinators, and some of these viruses are now being transmitted to them, especially in our bombus community. And so it's really critical that we have a healthy honeybee population here in Connecticut in support of a multi-billion-dollar Connecticut agricultural industry that we have. And
Say a bombast? I'm sorry, pardon my ignorance. Your
that's
bombast
right.
community?
Our bumblebees.
Oh, that's your bumblebee community is your bombast community?
Bombus, yeah.
Oh, cool. Excellent. You know, I read the phrase feral bees for the first time in my life recently. What feral bees? Those are bees that don't live in a hive? I mean, what's a feral bee?
And so honeybees are not native to our land, and they went extinct many years ago, along with the dinosaurs.
Really?
And so absolutely, yeah. And we recently found, it was I think a couple, 3 years ago, in Utah, we found some fossil remains of honeybees. And so we did have honeybees in North America a long time ago, but they went extinct. And the bees that we have today were brought over by our ancestors when they came across on that mass migration from Europe. And they brought two things that are really critical for us today. They were an agricultural community starting out in a new land. And on that ship, they had two things. They had a box of bees, or actually a basket full of bees at that time, because they kept bees in baskets then. And they had apple trees, which are also not native to North America.
Wow.
And look at what we have today across the United States with our apple trees.
I am learning. We only have a few minutes. I'm going to ask you, has there been an explosion of backyard beekeepers in the state?
There has been an explosion.
Yes.
And we have so many people wanting to get involved and to help our honeybee colonies. And so, you know, we register all bunch of honeybee colonies here in the state. And I recently looked up our numbers, and we have over 8,600 colonies maintained by over 1,700 beekeepers. And,
wow,
and
that's fantastic.
These
now,
plenty
of these are in the city, is that right?
Yeah, we have bees in the city. We have bees in New Haven. I have bees over at Common Ground High School on a grant project that I'm working at to get youth involved with beekeeping. And I have some at West Rock Nature Center. Working with the kids on a grant that I have gotten.
Fantastic.
And those are wonderful things.
Now, all these things,
excited.
This is all good for the bee population, right? I mean,
the more
the merrier. There's no such thing as too many beehives or
I don't think
too much beekeeping?
No. There's a steep learning curve with bees. And so, unfortunately, many of the bee colonies that are established today probably won't be successful over the winter. And we'll have to retool our skills for next year and give it another try. I started when I was 17, and unfortunately, I killed a lot of honeybee colonies until I got serious and took up some studies. And
have they taken the revenge on you?
They take revenge on me every day. I don't wear protection when I visit my bees.
No, you don't wear protection?
I allow them to tell me. I wear very little protection.
Oh, my God.
I want them to tell me.
Do you give instructional workshops or something like that to somebody who's interested in starting hives?
Absolutely.
Do they can go to you and find out everything that they need to be doing to
They can correctly. Give me a call here at the Ag Station or send me an email at mark.creighton@ct.gov, and I will put them into contact with three great beekeeping clubs that we have here in Connecticut that have hundreds of members.
Fantastic.
One Bee Club meets right here at the Ag Station on a quarterly basis and explore beekeeping together. It's a wonderful thing.
Oh, that sounds great.
I wish we didn't have to do this, but we have got to say goodbye to you for now. Thank you so much.
We could go on and on with you, Mark. And thank you.
We could talk for hours.
I know. Thank you so much for being with us, folks. You've been listening to WPKN 89.5 FM. Thank you, Mark. Thanks to all of our guests.
And if you know anybody who didn't get a chance to listen to the show live, remind them that they can listen to the podcast anytime they want. Just go to WPKN.org and you'll find out exactly how to download all of the New Haven Maven shows. We'll see you next month.
See you next time. See you in September.
Oh, wow.
I know.
See what we've got coming up then.
WPKN, drowning out the voices in your head since 1963.